Hi, this is Mike
Ross, the right
public
one.
Address announcer for your Toronto Maple Leafs, and this is the Leafs Late Night Podcast, your post-game destination. And now, your starting lineup, Roscoe, the Fanalist, Southey, Beaner, and Darty Brodeur on the Leafs Late Night Podcast.
Wacky waving arm filling inflatable tube, man.
Wacky Wild Inflatable Arm Flailing Tube Man.
Yeah. So, sorry for the extended break since our last episode. All of us have jobs, as I mentioned last time, basically same excuse, different date. I don't know what to tell you guys. Like, we do this when we can. There's some months when we can do episodes literally every game and more, and other times where we are all just too busy to keep up with this. And I apologize. I know you guys like hearing from us, and we like hearing from you and doing this. And it's just one of those times. It's, you know, luckily it's lining up with what most people would call garbage time in hockey. But unfortunately, around garbage time is also the trade deadline. So we missed kind of doing a lead up to that. But I think we did enough of that in the weeks leading up. It's almost like we had an inkling that we weren't going to be available on the deadline day.
Like, with what you were saying, did Brad realize that this is his full-time job? He doesn't have to work another job, so he has time to do trades? Or
okay, look, because it's been so long, we're gonna go a little broad with this. I'm not gonna hone in too much on games. There were a couple cool things that happened that we can talk about. I mean, Bertuzzi's fight, I'm kind of blanking. There were some other things that happened that I wanted to touch on. I'm sure they'll come to me later. But what I really want to touch on is that we talked about this over the last couple of weeks. The Leafs don't have a ton to trade, and there wasn't a ton available that really made sense for them to add. There was obviously the opportunity for Brad to go way off the board, which, I mean, he kind of did, but not in a big way. There were whispers of Buchnevich and Parayko happening, but, I mean, the amount that you'd have to spend on that and – like I was saying with Parayko, it's 6.5 until 2030. I don't know how you really make that fit. It just seems like you're handcuffing yourself again. But we saw what we kind of expected, which was not a ton out and not a ton in, which I'm happy about, because if you're going to spend, now wasn't the time to, and the Leafs have so little to, I'm glad you didn't waste it on bringing something in right now. But that's my take. What did you think about the Leafs' performance on deadline day?
Initially, like most people, I think, like, you want the shiny new toy.
Of course.
And with Vegas coming into the league the way they have, they literally get everything all the time. So I think that makes all 31 other fan bases a little envious. You know, there's the theory and the thought process that we can't keep wasting, air quotes, wasting, the prime seasons of Matthews and Marner and Nylander. But if you don't see a slam dunk, like, yes, I was advocating for possibly Parayko, but that's a hell of a contract to fit in, like you brought up. And not only are you having to fit in that contract going forward, but you're also having to sell the farm. And if I'm selling the farm, like, not that we would have been in the running, but I'd rather sell the farm for a Byram than a Parayko.
Yeah, it just seemed like with everybody else loading up and the Leafs not being, you know, first place in the Atlantic, like, we were talking in the offseason with the potential that the Bruins could be taking a step back, which, that didn't pan out. And
I've been saying that for years.
Tampa, I know. And Tampa being, starting to age out of their prime, we thought that this was the Leafs' chance to potentially, you know, have a decent run in the regular season. And, you know, maybe they would be buyers at this point. But the way everything shook out, we lost a couple guys to injury. It's been an above average regular season, but not what we maybe expected. Maybe not expected. We knew it was going to be a step back, but the last couple of years have been more. Go ahead.
Didn't I kind of call that to start the season? That we were going to be meddling all season and then ramp up for the playoffs, whereas everyone was calling for the Leafs to win the President's Trophy?
I mean, yeah, I think you did. I wish I'd seen a little more meddling throughout the season, especially after Klingberg went down. I think there was a lot of talk then about, you know, this Tanev and Zadorov trade that never panned out. And then there was no backup to that. There was no, okay, well, here's plan B. We kind of just heard whispers of trades that could have been impactful. And then at the end of the day, we get Dewar and Edmondson, which are decent depth pickups, but I mean, they're not shiny new toys like you mentioned that you come to expect to want to see on deadline day when you're going for a playoff run.
But at the same time, like I said, initially I was upset. Well, not upset, but a little disappointed that we didn't get the shiny new toy. But then you look at where they did at. They focused in on specific needs. Like, our penalty kill has been atrocious.
So bad.
And Dewar's a good penalty killer. Edmondson's a good penalty killer. He's a big body with a long reach. Right? Those are two, they're not all-stars, but they're two legitimate adds that fill a specific void on the team.
That's a good point.
We're not looking to do a six incoming player shakeup like last year, where everybody said, you know, potentially wreck the chemistry of the team. We're not trying to change the entire roster mid-season. Or, the biggest downside I see to it is now Benoit looks like the odd man out. And that could just be me being me because I love the guy. But I'm more happy with it after the fact, because you look at all these teams, like Colorado just couldn't help themselves this year. They were in on everything. The Canes, the first year and forever that they were actually in on a whole whack of stuff.
Everything. I couldn't believe the deals they were making.
Right? Like, I'm not saying it's not going to work for those teams. Like, it's not set in stone that it's not going to. But sometimes the minor deals here and there are more beneficial and more impactful to the team.
Yeah, look, when you've got Matthews, Nylander, Marner, Tavares, the idea that you need to spend a ton to bring somebody in to help them it just seems a little crazy. Like, you shouldn't have to add that much. So I think I like what you're saying about, you know, fixing the holes that are on the team that have presented themselves. A big shakeup wouldn't be good, because look how long it took Domi and Bertuzzi to slot into this lineup. Like, we're in March and everyone's finally like, hey, these guys are scoring. I like them now. You know, it was not an easy fit for them. And to what you said earlier about not, I guess, being particular about the year that you sell the farm on, like, it's really got to be like, yes, Matthews is scoring at an insane pace this year and will probably break the, or could break the salary cap era record. But I mean, for him to do that and the team to be just, you know, above average means that there's not a ton of other scoring going on. Like, that doesn't mean sell everything, we got to go for it because Matthews is having his best year. I think you got to, you know, accumulate, like, rebuild what you lost over the years of Dubas. Like, Trey has to let these, you know, catch up on the years that you've lost these draft picks from, see how some of these guys pan out, and, you know, take a inventory of the cupboard in the off season, because right now I just don't think it's worth giving away the few pieces. Like, what, every trade mentioned the same few guys because it's the only thing the Leafs have. It's like Minton, Cowan, Nyes, Robertson, maybe Liljegren in the first. Like, that's your whole future. That's like everything that you've drafted. So I don't know. It's got to be everything's going so well that it's worth moving that. There's somebody out there that's worth it. I didn't see it this year. So, yeah.
Well, and if you look at the team, like, you brought up Bert and Domi, how it's taken them this long. Like, the last month and a half, Domi's been playing awesome.
Yeah.
Bertuzzi's finally been starting to bury, and I loved seeing the little snarl from him in the Boston game. Like, talking Weatherspoon into fighting him and then just feeding him.
Well, and especially after the first time they played Boston earlier in the year, and Bertuzzi took all the heat for not getting involved and laughing because he still saw these guys essentially as his teammates from, you know, a couple months ago. And he was like, I don't know, I'm not going to get in the middle of this because I feel like I'm on both sides. I haven't really picked a home yet. And now that we're into March, it's a completely different attitude from him. Like, you can tell he's really bought in. He's here. He knows he's sticking around. He wants to win. He's starting to find it. So, like that fight wouldn't have happened in October against the Bruins.
No, it wouldn't have. And so you have those two that are picking it up and they're giving us what we expected of them. You have Sammy, who's been on a tear. Like,
yeah. I mean, numbers-wise, there's a few little moments where he seems uncomfortable and we see him start to forget where the posts are. But overall, the numbers and being able to hold it down when it matters, got to give it to
with
him.
With how he was playing in October, if you went back to me in October and told me that, you know, by the beginning of March, his record would be what it is, especially in his last, 13, 14 games, I would have been blown away.
Yeah, I think he's 12-2 in his last 14.
Yeah. And yeah, another fact about the minor ads too, it was brought up on the broadcast that I didn't even think of. Guess who Connor Dewar played over 400 minutes with last season?
Oh, who?
Ryan Reeves.
Oh. I mean, that's
on
pretty
the fourth
helpful
line
for
and mini.
Like, I mean, if you're playing, yeah, those penalty killing and kind of grinding bottom 6 minutes, like, yeah, it's at least nice to have some chemistry there because we haven't seen a ton of offense from them. And, you know, with Reeves kind of starting to pick it up, sure, give him somebody that he knows how to play with.
Right. A little bit of familiarity on both sides for a new guy coming in and for Reeves, who's had a very up and down year so far.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's been down the last few months. In the last 2 weeks, he's starting, or 2-3 weeks, he's been starting to pick it up again. So maybe this will be good for him. Edmondson, it's like you don't even have to ask, oh, I wonder what number he's playing with. Oh, never mind. It's that guy who's a foot taller than every single other person in a Leafs jersey. He sticks out like a sore thumb because we have not had someone this large on the team. Like, holy shit.
I don't recall seeing a defenseman on the Leafs that tall since Hal Gill.
Yep. That's probably gotta be it. Like, yeah. Holy.
Which is crazy.
And it's nice to see somebody that's in front of the net and just shoving people away, even though, again, it's his ex team, but like seeing him not directly in front of the net, but, you know, 10 feet out and stopping people from even getting close to Sammy, just constantly has the stick on their back. Like, no, my stick is like 3 times as wide as you. So no matter which way you turn, you are still going to be in my stick. So good luck. I'm, yeah. It's not like a huge drop in the bucket, but I'm happy with the add of Edmondson. I think it'll be useful. Like you said, the penalty kill has been fucking atrocious this year. Kampf has not been what he used to be. I do like Nylander on the penalty kill in the role of, like, if they make a mistake, he can jump on it and probably score. But, like, I don't know. Other than that,
in the absence of Mitch, yeah. But in a perfect world, everybody's healthy, nobody's sick. Mitch is there instead of Willie.
Yeah. It is interesting that he's been able to find some usefulness there in just being the guy that jumps on the loose pucks. But yeah, definitely missing Mitch. And I don't know. It's just been strange. This flu bug has been affecting people in different ways. Like, Matthews has definitely been off the last 2 or 3 nights. Like, you can see there's a shift here and there where you're like, oh yeah, he's still playing, but like, oh, it's the second period, and it's kind of the first time I've noticed him. Like,
they panned to Willie on the bench at one point tonight, and I don't know if he's being affected by this right now. I swear to God, trying to read his lips, he said, "I am fucking shit right now." Like, I don't know what else he could have said. Maybe he was saying something in Swedish, but I swear that's what he said.
I mean, lip reading, when it's 4-letter words, it's pretty easy to find out what they're saying. yeah, it's tough because the last, I would say, month or so, it's like every night somebody else is down with it. So you know that it's only the guys that are not completely knocked out with it. Like, it's got to be going through everyone.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And another thing, bringing in, like, both Labushkin and Edmondson, but
totally
especially when you're
Labushkin, yeah.
Especially when you bring in someone like Edmondson with his experience, like the number of playoff series wins he's been a part of, his size, everything like that, it can take some weight off some of the other guys that we've been leaning heavily on for far too long. Like,
Morgan
I messaged
Riley.
In our, yeah, you and I talked about him the other day. but I messaged you in our group just before we came on. Like, this is the best I think I've seen Brody play in a long time. Like, he's still going to give it away, but like, confidence wise and making the right defensive play, getting in there, breaking it up, like, this is almost the old Brody. And is it because, you know, you can cut back on his minutes a bit with someone like Edmondson there, or that he knows, okay, I'm not going to have to do every single hard defensive shift?
Well, since we lost Muzzin and then Hall, there wasn't really a replacement. Like, we can put 20 minutes of defense time on somebody other than TJ Brody. So yeah, you're right. Like, he's been eating a lot of that when we've got, you know, puck moving defensemen. Otherwise, it's tough. Like, Gio's kind of like the hybrid one, but otherwise it's a lot of offensive defensemen, and he kind of gets stuck with all those shifts. So yeah, it's nice that now Benoit and McCabe are there. McCabe's kind of, again, like a bit of a hybrid, but he's, I'd say, more on the defensive side. Benoit's obviously stepped up, but yeah, Edmondson to be able to take on like actual like time against top line players, that's something that, you know, I think we desperately need. Because it's fucking Riley and Brody are taking too many minutes.
Yeah, and I almost think they kind of rushed Riley back in after his suspension to too much minutes. Like, I know he wasn't hurt, but with how the team was playing and how those pairs were playing, you almost needed to just leave them alone and let Riley get his feet back into the game on the third pairing.
Yeah, it's almost like if it's broke, don't fix it. Like, everything was going well and they just went, okay, throw that all out the window. We got to put it back to how it was before. It's like, well, okay, how about we figure out how this works with Riley back in the lineup instead of just throwing this all out the window? I don't know. That was kind of a silly time, and I'm trying not to be negative about Riley, but it is strange seeing how bad the team has been playing since he came back. But again, they've all been sick too, so it's hard to tell what's been going on lately.
Yeah, there's been the sickness. Like, this is the dog days of the year, right? Right around the trade deadline, just before and just after, when, you know, most teams know if they're going to make it or not. It's not the playoffs yet, so everybody's kind of just going through the motions.
Yeah, I'd say the breakout star of garbage time, though, has to still be Bobby McMahon, who scores another goal tonight. Like, this guy, obviously, they mentioned he had a scoring record in junior, but, like, this is something that's out of nowhere. Like, the guy had, what, 3 goals in 30 or 40 games coming into this year, and now you're talking 10 or, what do we say, 12 goals in 50-something career games. Like, that's something to put an asterisk on now. Like, not an asterisk of like, this doesn't count, but like, oh, we should watch this guy. Like, this might be someone that blossoms into a middle six forward, like, all the time.
Yeah, he's getting like, he's almost good for a goal like every other game or something like that. Like, get the dollar McPicks menu and get a McGoal. Like,
well, it's nice when you're not getting, I mean, sure, Bertuzzi's had a couple in the last week or two, but it's not been consistent, and he has not, again, scored in the last 5 or 6 games. So it is nice that there has been a consistent scorer, finally, and outside of the top 4 guys, which is Bobby McMahon. And now Yarncroke's back, too. So I'm hoping that the combination of Domi and Bertuzzi finding it, Yarncroke's back and he's looking good, and McMahon's good. You know, you bring Duer in with Reeves. Like, the bottom six has been so bad that this needs to fix it. This has to fix it.
I'm not necessarily worried about the scoring from the bottom six. Like, I know that's been a problem in the past, but with how bad the bottom six was to start the year defensively, like, every time the fourth line was on the ice, it felt like in October, it was a goal against every single shift.
Well, yeah. And I mean, if you're spending the time taking shots on net instead of defending, it's a lot easier to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah. And the fact that they can have the luxury of putting someone like Holmberg down there, like, Holmberg, he's kind of like a Yarncroke. Like, yeah, you can kind of play him anywhere in the lineup. He's got the skill, he's got the hockey sense and the motor to kind of do a little bit of everything.
He's the new Kerfoot.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. little bit.
I like the speed from Domi tonight. He was shot out of a friggin' cannon for that breakaway.
Holy. Like, that guy is... He's such a weird player to watch because, like, he's kind of like Marner where you think, you have a wide open net. You're going to shoot this. Oh, never mind. He's going to make a pass. Oh, you're going to burst out and grab this puck. Oh, no, he's going to go the other way. Like, he never really does the thing you're expecting him to do. And then tonight it was just like, boom. Oh, he's going to actually go for this. Like, holy shit. Attaboy. I would never, like, 9 out of 10 times expect Domi to take that opportunity and go for the breakaway. Like, normally he would just maybe, like, poke it in or try to, you know, grab it and do what Marner does and stop up and look for somebody else. But, oh, good for him.
Not only to go for it, but to actually, like, to get the puck and actually get a good chance on net, too.
Yeah.
Let alone it going in.
Oh, I just had a, like, flashback to Marner not shooting on that open net in the Bruins last night, 2 nights ago. That was absolutely bonkers. Like, he does that sometimes, but I've never seen one that wide open with a goalie, like, that far from the net. And then he tries for the wraparound and falls over and almost hurts himself, and now actually did. Like, he was out. So, great.
Yeah.
Nice job. That's one they didn't really want to put out in the press release. Like, injured because of the way he tried to fix his mistake. He's had a lot of those this season. Like, the amount of breakaways, penalty shots, little like times where you see him do that extra move and he loses the puck and then he gets it back and scores. Like, did you see in the shootout the other night where I forgot what goalie they were against, but they called him on it because they're like, no, he lost control of the puck. They're like, eh, for like a half a second, but he still got it again. That's not the first time he's done that this year.
No, but thankfully he kept the stick moving fast enough that you really couldn't even argue against the fact that he was just stick handling it, right?
Yeah, but he keeps going a little faster than he should and losing it. He's a funny guy to watch, man. Great season, but man, he keeps tripping over himself and stick handling over his own fucking hands. So I guess really the gist of this is, what does this team look like against Boston in the first round? Because that's seeming like who we're going to play. And it's been a couple of years, but they're the big bad boogeyman, right? I mean, everyone seemed like last year was the time they could go for it against them, but it seems like this year is going to be it. So what does this team look like against Boston with all these new additions?
To be completely honest, I'm not thrilled about going into the playoffs against anybody, but, you know, I put my leaf colored glasses on. Like, I'm not afraid. Like, there's a little bit of concern there. You look at the season series. I know the regular season doesn't really mean anything. But you could argue that in some of the games against Boston this year, the Leafs did it to themselves. Like, we also have just recently got our goaltending back. Like, not that it's an excuse, but those factors are there. We played like dog shit for the first three months of the season.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, not to diminish the Bruins, they've got some of the best goaltending we've seen in a while in a tandem. Like, both those guys are over like a 920 save percentage. It's insane. Swayman and Ullmark just, you know, it shouldn't make sense that they found both these guys and they're on the contracts they are, but here we are. So I think that's going to be tough to get through regardless of what team you are and whether you're Austin Matthews or Connor Dewar. It's hard to score on this guy. So, or either guy. So that's, I think, going to be one of the hardest things. And the fact that Marchand gets away with, like, murder. I mean, he almost took Liljegren's head off the other night and there's no call. Like, this is what the guy's famous for. He's going to injure somebody. And, you know, now he's the captain. It's his job.
We also did pick up the cross-check king in Edmondson. So that'll help us there.
So that's, I guess, what I mean is how much does the fact that we now have Bertuzzi and Domi and Reeves and Edmondson and Benoit and, like, we haven't played the Bruins in a playoff situation with this team. Like, this is quite a different team than last time. So,
not only is this quite a different team, like, the Leafs are quite a different team, but also the Bruins are quite a different team. Because, yes, he didn't use it all the time, but having a presence like Chara on the back end was massive for how long he was there and what he was able to bring.
Oh, yeah. The Leafs always struggled against him. No matter what team Chara played for, he was a Leaf killer.
Mm-hmm. And they had arguably the best defensive center that the league has seen in the past 20 years in Bergeron.
Yep.
Like, as much as I dislike the Bruins, Bergeron was an amazing player. So, yes, they're able to still do well and have a great regular season, but what did everybody always tell us? Every single year, regular season doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Bruins had one of the best regular seasons ever last year, and they got swept, so who knows?
Then guess what?
Didn't they?
No, they had a chance to put the Panthers away, and then Marchand missed a breakaway, and Panthers came back and won it in seven.
Oh, well, my memory's shit. Anyway, between
Tampa when they got swept by Columbus.
Right, that's what it is. I think that the center depth is the thing that the Bruins obviously are lacking this time. But, you know, these guys have stepped up to the plate. Coyle and what's his name? McAvoy? Not McAvoy. What's his name?
McAvoy's defenseman. Zacha.
Zacha, right. And it's all these A's, I swear, on that team. I think that's where you get to take a bit of an advantage against them. Like the face-off dot's going to be where the Leafs got to really, you know, hammer them in tonight. Matthews was garbage. That's why I think he's got to be sick. It was like 4 for 15 on the dot. The dude's usually way better than that. I mean, Nick Suzuki's not fucking that great. Come on. So there's that. And then keeping Pasta out from in front of the net, because my God, that dude is so dangerous. You see that play between his legs he almost scored on? Like, they... Fuck. So I guess that's what Edmondson helps with, is, you know, keeping people out from in front of the fucking net.
Yeah, like, it... The game is such a tight... Like, really, every NHL game is such a tight game with the tiniest of mistake being a big issue on the score sheet, right? And, okay, the Leafs haven't played the greatest, but a lot of times, you know, that even the games that we're losing, we're battling, oh, we can't beat the goalie, or we had one bad bounce, and that went in, and that was, that, you know, that was why we lost. Like, it's a game of inches. It really is. It always has been. And like I said, with just focusing on some minor things that can be huge improvements for the team might have been the best way to go about it.
Yeah.
So a little bit better penalty killing. Well, that might solve the Pasta problem, right? Because you're going to get penalties no matter what. You're going to get penalties. So if your penalty killing percentage can go up even by a couple percent, well, that can be the difference of a win or a loss in a playoff game.
Well, yeah, because what we've seen Keefe do a lot lately is playing the top four guys on the penalty kill, like throwing Matthews or Marner or Nylander out there. And it's like, I get it to have somebody jump on that puck that comes loose, but if you can not have them play like 26 minutes a night and keep them in optimal positions and rested for those shifts when they're going to be impactful, instead of having them always out there all night, like, it's just not beneficial. So when you have now Connor Dewar and you have and you can run him and David Kampf both back and forth on penalty kill, like, you alleviate those extra minutes from guys that really shouldn't be playing that time. Like, yeah, great, Marchand can do it, a couple other guys are stars on the penalty kill, keep Marner there, but like, I don't want to see Matthews killing penalties.
Lemieux killed a lot of penalties in his day.
That's cool. I just, it's not necessary. Like, it's not now, you know. Keep the guy healthy. He's got enough issues going on with his wrists and whatnot. Like, I say, put them out in the times when it matters and don't overplay these guys, because sure, they're young, but like, the minutes these guys are playing is getting out of hand. And that's just, I'm not going to get too much into Keefe, but holy fuck. It's been, you can see it on Willie. Like, the guy's gassed by the third period with how much they're playing him in all these different positions. And he makes stupid ass mistakes, and everyone starts calling for, oh, he's got to be benched. Oh, we're overpaying him. It's like, no, they're playing him in dumb, like, roles. I don't, I'm so over this. And Liljegren too. They keep putting him out there like he's the only person who can play on the right side. And, you know, now he has horrible games again. Like, takes shit penalties because he's gassed and starts hooking people. Ugh, Keith. Sheldon. Brad. Sheldon. So annoyed.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. I wanted to see if we have any questions, but I don't think we have any tonight. Somebody just said, fuck the Habs, that's all. Oh, do I still have my...
I can get behind that.
I had a video for that at one point, didn't I? Let me see if I still have that one. I don't think I do. I think I deleted all those. But we used to have one where there was a guy screaming, fuck the Habs. So I hope that was in reference to that, and I'm not just like scrolling through these desperately to find it. I have so many old videos in here I need to go through. They're not labeled. They're just like random file names. Ugh, nothing's playing anyway. So without getting too much into other teams, because everybody can look up what everyone did on the trade deadline boards and stuff. Who do you think won deadline day?
Well, realistically, you would probably have to look and say a Carolina or a Colorado. Like, it is so out of the norm for Carolina to do what they did that I kind of want to say they won. Because, like, adding a player like Gensel to that team, and if you just look at Gensel, what's the big thing, like the one big complaint about Carolina throughout the years that they've made all these different runs to the conference finals and stuff like that, is that when it gets tight, they don't have, like, they've got stars. They've got great players. I'm not trying to take anything away from Aho, Svechnikov, any of those guys. They don't have that sniper. They don't have that guy who they can turn to for goal. And yet,
that's true.
They went out and they got Gensel.
Yeah, looking. Is he injured right now?
I think he was injured a week or so before the deadline. I don't think it's anything serious, but and then another thing is you see a lot of these teams that they'll take chances on players and it might even be a player that you kind of give your head a little shake. Like, why are you, you know, there's a lot of rumors about that guy. Why are you taking a chance on him? And then it works like beautifully. And Carolina is one of those teams. They don't tend to make bad personnel decisions. So the fact that they went out and they got Kuznetsov as well, to me, that's massive. Either they know something that everybody else doesn't, or, you know, they really, really think they can help him turn his career around. And if he is even a shell of what he was for Washington in the cup run, then they are going to be really deadly come playoff time.
Yeah, and they got him at $3.9 million. So the fact that they can fit him in with that, man. I'm looking at their team here. So Aho, Svechnikov, Teravainen, Kotkaniemi, Kuznetsov, Nietzsche, Stahl, Fast, Martinuk, Drury, Jarvis, Lemieux, Nosen. And then on defense, Orlov, Slavin, Burns, Shea, Pesci, D'Angelo, and Chatfield. Freddie Anderson just came back. So they got Anderson, Kochetkov, and Spencer Martin, plus Jake Gensel now. My God. Oh, thanks for claiming $685,000 of Ilya Lyubushkin too, guys. Appreciate it. I forgot
that was something that was really weird this year. Is the teams that you did not expect being the banker teams?
Yeah, like Tampa.
Yeah, I guess they have the IR space now with Sergachev going down, but it's not the teams that you would expect to be making those moves.
Well, I think, I mean, just a theory. Maybe it's because teams like Tampa have spent so many draft picks over the last couple of years that they're like, great, if we can get like a fourth back here just for taking on a couple hundred grand, like basically just buy a draft pick, sure, we can turn that into a player sometime in a package that we need next year, maybe.
Tampa basically traded an entire draft, like draft year for Tanner Janot last year. So,
and then the next year for Brandon Hagel.
Yeah, it's they need all the picks they can get right now.
Yeah, so I think that might be why, but otherwise, I don't know. The Canes, did they take on a draft pick in that whole thing that they ended up moving for somebody there? Let me check.
I think they might have.
Canes acquired a sixth round pick. Okay. So let's see what happened. Canes. Cap friendly. Thanks, cap friendly. Trades. Did that sixth round pick go somewhere? Oh my God. They sent so many fucking things around. Cade.
Oh yeah, we got that prospect Cade, from them as well.
Yeah, Cade Weber for another sixth round pick from the Leafs.
Yeah, he's like 6'7", like a 6'7" shot blocker. So we were talking about seeing Edmondson back there. That's basically hopefully what he turns into being.
So from Toronto, 2024 sixth round pick, where did that thing go? Is it still theirs? 2024 sixth round pick. Yeah, weird. So they have our 2024 sixth and our 2026 sixth. I mean, if they were going to take it on there, they could have moved it. So yeah, Jake Guentzel goes for Michael Bunting. So that's the other fun part of this is Dubas loves his guys and nobody in Pittsburgh is happy about this trade.
No, that's the most upset I think I've ever seen Crosby.
Yeah, he was like, basically at trade me. I'm done if this is what we're doing.
Which is just mind-boggling to think.
Yeah, like Michael Bunting, Vasily Ponomarev, Cruz Lucius, Ville Koivunen, a second conditional, a fifth conditional, be a first if Carolina makes it to the Cup Finals. Pittsburgh will receive this pick if Carolina wins the 2024 Stanley Cup. Okay, so they're not getting that one. Well, I mean, they might, but that's crazy. It's an insane condition.
I didn't realize we included Dmitry Ovchinnikov in the Connor Dewar deal.
Yeah.
There was so much going on, and I was driving. I was trying to listen to SiriusXM on delay and ignore messages from you guys on my phone all day.
But just looking at the way this trade breaks down, this is like the most fucking Kyle Dubas trade ever. Like, I want Michael Bunting because he's a guy that I found, and a bunch of like Ponomarev, Lucius, and Koivunen. Like, those are such Dubas names to grab. Just like, you don't know who these guys are, but their numbers in whatever league they play in are dope. They're going to be great. Just you wait. Like, oh my God.
The other team, like I said, I think it's kind of a toss up between Colorado and Carolina, although Colorado might have done a little too much. Like, Colorado basically changed a quarter of the roster. Like, yeah, I didn't know Yakov Trenin was available, but he's a big guy. Like, I will never forget him fighting Chara. So you bring in Trenin, Graham Sward, I think he's going to be an AHL guy right now. Brandon Duhaime, he can be a good bottom six guy for them.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in Casey Mittelstadt. So they gave up on Byram. But realistically, when you have Makar and Girard already there, you got to kind of pick and choose your battles. And they're paying Girard more right now. So they kind of had to move Byram. Mittelstadt's had a great year. Lot of upside with him. He just hasn't been able to put it all together in Buffalo, although we've seen that before.
Oh, and we love a one-for-one player hockey trade like that. Just, you need this and we need that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, like Weber for Subban or JVR for Shen. Like,
those are just the best fucking trades.
And then they grabbed Sean Walker as well, which they were doing that enabled them to be able to move Byram. So Colorado was busy. But yet again, did they do too much?
Just to bring it back to the Leafs for a sec, I was surprised that Brad didn't make a decision on the goaltending. Like, moving Martin Jones, even just to get a pick back for the offseason to spend, like, you've got too many guys at this point. Like, with Wall, Samsonov, with maybe Matt Murray coming back, like, you're going to have to waive Martin Jones and lose him, I think. Like, is it worth carrying three goalies and scratching one of them to not get something back for him? Like, there had to be, even if it's a sixth, like, my God, like, I don't think we need that. Yes,
it's worth it.
Is it?
The percentage chance of a fourth, a fifth, or a sixth round draft pick making the NHL for the added security of having someone, Wohl's had a little bit of an injury history. Yes, Sammy played great last year, and he's playing great right now, but he was playing in a different galaxy to start the year. So if we can have Jones there as an extra insurance, heaven forbid Wohl gets hurt, heaven forbid Sammy hops on the Millennium Falcon and goes to another galaxy in the playoffs. Like,
I guess
we have Jones. Like, he's already here. We didn't have to give up anything for him, right?
Yeah, I'm not saying to get the pick to use it. I'm saying get a pick to, you know, use for trades later on because they've got really nothing. But yeah, I guess it's really not as deep as I was remembering it is. But if you're going to play, what's his face, Hildeby, you're going to bring him up. Like, I don't know. I just think they have enough options that they could have got something back. But I guess there's no rush. And if nobody's calling about him, there's no point in just shipping him out for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird deadline day. I mean, there were no like massive names on the board, but I think a lot of teams did make a lot of moves to make them better. Like, I mean, we haven't really mentioned Vegas, but holy shit, a lot of bolstering of teams.
Well, yeah, and there was like, it's been a trend the last couple of years to get a lot, like most of the teams are getting their work done 2-3-4 days to a week before the deadline, right? Like Tanev, yeah. Hanifin, all done well before the deadline. So I think that's going to be a continuing trend going forward. And it's not necessarily the worst idea because then you do get to give those guys the extra time to get, you know, accustomed to how the team plays or what guy likes to go where for which shift, right?
Even if it's two or three games, you know, when it's in the last 20 of the season, it makes all the difference.
Yeah.
So anything else we want to cover hockey-wise before we talk about something else I want to talk about?
Just screw Montreal, both NHL and PWHL. Toronto, I think it was 2-3 win the other night against Montreal in the PWHL.
Nice. I'm going to an Ottawa-Montreal game, I think, in like a week or two. I forget.
Nice.
Yeah, but Emmeline bought tickets for it, so I'm excited. So what I brought up on the end of last show that we didn't have time to talk about was the enhanced games that were announced. And I just want to spend a couple minutes talking about what that means and what your interest level, and I want to hear yours, the listener's interest level is in this, because
it's, I feel like I'm going to turn into the Abe Simpson meme with this conversation.
And that's fair. Like, look, my take on it, for anyone who was unaware, the enhanced games are happening in December, and it is basically the Olympics with no restrictions on performance enhancing drugs. They will be monitored and closely watched by physicians to make sure that people are not going to hopefully overdose on these things. That's kind of the criticism of this, is that it's quite dangerous to have people just, you know, not have regulations on it. It's one thing when they're testing and people are trying to sneak something through and do a certain amount of something to not get caught. It's another when you just say, you know, do whatever you want, try whatever you want, and as much of it, and you're against other people that you know are on it, so you have to outperform them. Like, it just seems like it's going to be a one-upping battle. That being said, there is a lot of doping going on in the Olympics that doesn't get caught, and that does get caught, and it's just, until they're able to confidently say that all the athletes out there are clean, like, it's tough to say with all these individual sports, like, who is really the best. So, like, this is a league of its own. I think it'll be interesting to see how far somebody on, you know, PEDs can throw, like, a shot put or a javelin or something, or do, you know, 100 meter. And I'm also interested to see how those numbers compare to people that aren't. Like, how much farther is it? How much faster are they? And if it's close, to, what does that mean about how much performance-enhancing drugs are already used in the Olympics? Like, I think it's going to answer a lot of fun questions.
I don't. like, everybody cheats, but it, to me, it's still just, like, I don't know. I don't like it. Call me Abe Simpson yelling at a cloud, but...
No, look, like, I don't like it, but I'm at the point of, like, it's happening whether I like it or not. So what does this mean for me? What can I take from it? What's going to be interesting to see? Because, like I said, it's happening. There's a lot of ex-Olympians and current Olympians that were cut that have signed up for it. So, you know, there's hundreds of athletes, apparently. Obviously, there wouldn't be, like, team sports. I don't know what the actual lineup of sports is. Actually, maybe I can find it. Enhanced games. What would it be? Lineup. Okay, event plan. Yeah, what do we got here? It doesn't... athletics, aquatics, gymnastics, combat, and strength. I don't know what that means. Like, guys, tell me what sports you're doing.
See, I'm more interested in seeing what's his name, that YouTuber guy, fight Mike Tyson.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that in a sec. I do want to close this out. We do need to talk about that. Okay. So as far as the enhanced games go, if it's swimming, cycling, weightlifting, running, like all those individual things, sure, it'll be interesting to compare to non-juiced athletes. I don't think there's any point in doing things like basketball and hockey, and like in order to get a full team of people to do that also would be crazy. Like maybe something like rowing or bobsled. I don't know, bobsled wouldn't make a difference, but a rowing team that's juiced would be kind of, you know,
well,
that would...
we've seen it with cycling. Look at Lance Armstrong.
Oh, for sure. Like,
right. Like it's been admitted.
Well, it's been admitted in every sport. Like these runners get caught all the time. Like I want to see, you know, when we're not questioning it, how close it is to these numbers that were already in the Olympics. Cause I think you're going to be shocked at how close they are. That's my prediction. Like, there's a few that'll be pretty crazy, I'm sure. Like I said, if you can be obvious about it and use as much of whatever you want, like some of these throwing and jumping and running events are going to be a little stupid. But oh man, so yeah, over to the announced July 20th Netflix boxing match of Logan or Jake. I don't ever remember which one's which. Was it Jake Paul?
I don't remember.
Jake Paul? It's definitely Jake. Yeah, Jake Paul is fighting Mike Tyson. And he's fought a bunch of people. He's like 12-1, I think. Jake Paul record. He is 9-1. Okay. He is 6-1 and has a 76-inch reach. He has 6 knockouts. That's cute. Mike Tyson has knocked out like 95% of the people he's ever fought.
He's also like 60.
It doesn't matter. Like, here's the thing. Floyd Mayweather is the kind of guy who will show up to a fight and be like, I'm here because this is entertainment. This is basically wrestling, like WWE to me. We are collecting a check and putting on a show for the people. I don't care who wins or loses. Like, I am... money team. Like, that's my shit. I'm here for the check. I'm gonna buy some stuff tomorrow. It's gonna be fantastic. Everyone's still gonna love me and know that it doesn't matter whether I won or lost against Jake Paul. Mike Tyson, on the other hand, is not gonna take another L on his record to somebody like Jake Paul, who is a YouTuber who's thought, I'm going to try to box. He's going to fucking kill him. He's going to knock this guy out. And I am so excited. I haven't watched a boxing match in a long time. This is one that I'm going to tune into. Like,
I'm definitely going to watch this one, and I can't even tell you the last time I watched a boxing match, but Jake Paul, but I watched it for the youth.
Yeah, man. I watched I watched the Pacquiao Mayweather fight. I think that was like the last pay-per-view that I ever watched. That was, you know, a decade ago at this point. So this will be fun. And I'm also interested to see how Netflix handles what's going to be a pretty heavily streamed event live. Like, they've been testing out tennis and some golf and stuff to see what lighter traffic live events they can handle, but this will be a big one for them.
Oh yeah, this is a test. It's gonna crash big time.
Well, it might. If it doesn't, it means that they'll probably take a swing at some sports rights. Like, it's not a secret; everything is coming up soon as far as the NHL and NBA go for broadcast rights. So, I think these guys are all testing out what their capabilities are beforehand. So I'm interested to. There's so many things that come out of all this that are indirectly related to hockey. Like, I want to know what hockey at the Olympics next is going to look like. And I want to know, like, I don't know. There's so much from this. It's great.
Also, shout out to the PWHL for having the confidence and the wherewithal to be different. Like, can we talk about their playoff format for a minute?
Oh yeah, those rules are sick. First place gets to pick who they play.
Right? Like, there's so many different avenues or different aspects that of how you can look at that. Like, okay, yeah, this team is a team I want to play. So then the other team's like, well, hell, they think they can beat us. Like, it's so intriguing, and it's such a refreshing take from a hockey league. Like, yeah. I love the NHL. I love hockey. Don't get me wrong, but I really like seeing this. You know, they started it with their point system, and then with the, what do they call it? The jailbreak. If you score on a penalty kill, like,
oh, they've yeah,
come
yeah.
up with some really good ideas that kind of change the way you can look at certain things in the game. And I love it.
Well, it's the advantage of starting with no rule book, right? Instead of having to edit one that's already, you know, 100 years old, you get to have a clean slate and talk to all the players. What do you guys want to see in a game that you're playing? And we get to all put it in. So the other cool one is that whoever's eliminated from the once you're eliminated from the playoffs, you start accumulating points with your wins towards getting the first overall pick. So instead of tanking, it's whoever pulls, we'll call it the Ottawa Senators, which is, once you're mathematically out of the playoffs, being the first place team in the league.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's been a lot of people talking about that in the NHL for a while, that they need to do something along those lines to try to prevent the tanking, right?
It's not good for the league or the fan bases to have these teams that are just built to lose, right? You just saw something on TV. What happened? Vancouver game?
I have the Vancouver-Winnipeg game on. Vancouver just went up 4-0.
Oi.
Not that long ago. And Demko is now not in the crease. It's Casey DeSmith. So I missed something.
Interesting. I'm kind of happy because I have Casey DeSmith on one of my fantasy teams, and I was mad that I had him in tonight instead of somebody else.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a little interesting. I have to keep my eye on that.
Yeah, I accidentally... So Igor Shesterkin is on my bench and got a 4-0 shutout. So I'm glad DeSmith got put in. I have DeSmith and Alex Lyon in for some reason, because this stupid Yahoo thing doesn't... I need to really check the goalies when I hit auto set. Anyway, the other thing about picking your opponent, the rivalry that creates, because it's like, oh, they wanted to play us and we won. Like, that's something that will be like 2 years of animosity between teams.
Oh, I absolutely love it. Like I said, it's so refreshing seeing something like this coming from our league, that it, or from it, our sport, that I really, really like it. And like, hats off to whoever decided that. And no offense to Berkey, but I can almost bet it wasn't Brian Burke, because when was the last time we saw an old white man come up with something that was good for the game?
Oh, shit. Where's my button? Where's my button?
Sorry,
I scrolled Berkey too far. There it is. But yeah, the whole point system for getting the first overall pick, I think, is really important. Because look what we've seen with, I mean, Chicago last year was a joke. And San Jose and Anaheim and Arizona and like Montreal a couple of years ago. Like, it's just been...
We did it.
And it's, you know, it's become part of the game. And it's kind of become part of Western pro sports in general. And they really got to figure it out, because the longer, like, this is the problem with any game, any sport, any video game, any tabletop game, anything. The longer it's out, people look for ways to get creative with how they exploit what's never been done before, right? Like, and then eventually those things just become commonplace, because it's, you know, everybody has to do it. Like this cap circumvention, you know, put somebody on IR and then you can make a couple moves and, you know, switch out who's on IR, bring them back for the playoffs. Like, it's now become commonplace. So I don't know. It's just, they got to come up with a way to keep the game entertaining for every fan base. Like, if you're going to have this parity with the salary cap, you can't also have teams just losing on purpose for 82 games and having fan bases just say like, well, I'm not going to pay for this. Like, Chicago's ticket sales were hit by this. And I mean, not that Winnipeg's tanking, but like, you know, their sales aren't doing well either. So you gotta find a way to make sure that everybody is trying to win. Everyone's competitive and everyone's contributing to the overall product, because at the end of the day, it's like the league lives or dies together. And right now we've got one team on life support that's literally bringing this whole league down. So let's figure out the problems and lift us all up together, please.
So you want to end on a non-hockey note?
Sure.
So I think I mentioned it before on one of the other episodes. My family, we're doing a big England trip later this year. So in October, we're going over to England. Some of Sonia's family, her one cousin's getting married, so we're going for the wedding and making a big vacation of it. And I've mentioned before, I'm a Manchester United fan. So I have to go to a game while I'm over there.
Oh, hell yes, you do.
We're not going to be far from Manchester. I've even got family that are over there. So, like, I need to see a game at Old Trafford. Now, scalping is highly illegal in the UK.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. We can get into that another day. One of the firefighters in one of the departments I was working in actually told me a story where he ended up in jail over there from buying a ticket from a scalper.
Oh, shit.
Because he didn't know. So in order to buy tickets or to be transferred tickets from someone, you have to be a member of that team. So you can buy an annual membership, and there's different levels for the membership. So like for instance, the Manchester United one, I bought my membership, I think it was £30, right? £30 for the year. And then now I can have access to buy tickets. And then
what? What else do you get with a membership other than access to buying tickets?
Depending on the level of membership you get, you can get, like, they'll send you a swag pack and then discounts on the store and stuff like this. So, like, it's not like you get nothing for it. So for curiosity's sake, I decided to take a look to see what the cost was. So they played this morning. And I looked up a couple days ago what the price of a ticket to that game would be, and take a stab at what it would be. Now, keep in mind the salaries of players on some of these soccer clubs compared to NHL players.
Am I guessing in pounds or in Canadian dollars?
I haven't done the conversion, so guess in pounds.
£469. What? I quit.
So, now it wasn't versus Liverpool or Man City. Like, it wasn't versus like a high-end rival. It was Everton. Not that there's no rivalry there, but I was flabbergasted. And this wasn't like a nosebleed. This was lower level, like, decent seats.
That's $85 Canadian.
Like, that is absolutely insane. To see those stadiums,
the most storied franchise in sports. Like, get the...
Yeah.
That's so annoying. That's so annoying. But the whole membership thing is interesting because, like, for somewhere like Europe where they're very anti-capitalist as far as, like, you know, tech companies and like, organizations forcing fees on people, like, they're very good about striking down. Mind you, they're not in the EU anymore, but the EU is generally really good about, you know, forcing companies not to do things like this. So it's strange that the soccer leagues have this thing in place where you have to have a membership in order to access tickets. This sounds like buying Taylor Swift concert tickets. You got to be part of the fan club.
This might just be EPL hell. It might just be Man U. I didn't look at any of the other teams, but
fair.
It was an interesting ordeal just setting it up. Like, I'm getting a head start on it. Obviously, we're not there till October, so that's still the next season. Because over there, soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, it runs on the same schedule as the hockey season. So it's a winter sport over there.
Want to actually finish on a hockey-related fun note?
Sure.
So because I go to Ottawa Senators Leaf games here, they're technically Ottawa Senators games, so I get emails from them all the time, and I like to play this fun game of what crazy deal have they emailed me for tickets, because people don't buy tickets at these games otherwise. Holy shit. Do you want to, since you had your little thing about the Man U tickets, what deal do you think they sent me here for, when was this? February 8th, they sent me this one.
I don't think it would top the one I saw for the Florida Panthers back in the day, but let's see. A family pack, so a 4-pack of tickets, 4 hot dogs and 4 drinks for $100.
Okay, so this is BOGO. Okay. So it says there are only 14 Sens homes games left for the 2024 regular season. Don't worry. This BOGO is here to help you catch as much Senators action as possible. Buy your tickets to one game and receive tickets to a second game for free. So if you buy the Golden Knights, Penguins, Oilers, Devils, Blackhawks, Blues, or Coyotes game, you will get Blue Jackets, Ducks, Stars, Canes, or Panthers game for free. And the tickets are $35. So for $35, you can see the Sens lose to the Oilers and the Panthers.
That actually wouldn't be a bad thing to do, especially with you get a chance to see McDavid.
McDavid and Tkachuks against each other. Like, how fun is that? For $35 a ticket, you can go to 2 games. That's crazy. I might actually do that right now. But can you believe that? 4 hours away, they can charge a tenth of the price. Like, oh my God. Oh, here, sorry. Edmonton game is $60. It's not 35. The other ones are all 35.
Like, I remember seeing on Leafs TV back in the day, they were showing one of the in-arena ads, and it was for the Florida Panthers, and they were playing 2 home games that weekend, and you got a ticket to both home games, hot dog, a fountain drink, and like a shirt or a hat or something, and it was like $50.
Oh my God. I love those things. Meanwhile, we made a whole stink about, like, you can have Yuppie come to your seat for $200.
Did you catch the board ad on the boards tonight? We eat maple leaves for breakfast.
Oh my God, no, I missed that. That's pretty good though.
Except they lost.
Yeah, glad we broke that that streak. What was it, 12 in a row we lost at the Bell Center?
I think it was just the home team winning, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. So they've won 12 in a row, and I think the Leafs have lost 5 in a row at the Bell Center. Like, they're just not good there. Well, that's all I got tonight. When no questions came in, so unless you got anything else, I'm outie.
No, I think we're good for tonight. We promise we'll do a better job of getting more shows out, but that's an easy promise to make when we don't play again till Thursday.
Well, yeah, and like I said, the next 4 weeks I promise the next 4 weeks I am on normal work people hours so I can watch games. And the problem has been, just to, you know, explain for a hot sec, the problem has been that I've been working at 7 a.m. a lot the last 3 weeks. So I cannot stay up after the games to edit and post these things and then go to sleep and then wake up to work 7 till 8. So sorry, but I'm back on normal work hours, so we'll have some more episodes. Thank you for tuning in. Catch us everywhere. I gotta go to bed.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Leafs Late Night, your night of post-game podcast. Available after every game on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible, and more.
Let's go, Connor Dewar.